And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Deng-Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, June 22nd, 2018. The talks between President Kiir and Riek Machar come to an end without a deal in Addis Ababa.
The IGAD summit said and decided that, yes, all the provisions that are agreed should be separated from the provisions which are not yet agreed.
But an opposition alliance official confirms the two are expected to meet again in Khartoum.
There was no much progress made, and that is why it has to be continued, probably in Khartoum and maybe in Nairobi.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan peace talks between President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar in Addis Ababa have ended without an agreement being reached. Information Minister Michael Makuei, who attended a session with the regional bloc IGAD leaders in Addis Ababa, told reporters upon his return to Juba today that IGAD leaders have declared the high-level forum is over, but talks between the two principals may carry on. Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Makuei says leaders of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development decided yesterday that the high-level forum ended in the extraordinary meeting of IGAD's Council of Ministers yesterday in Addis Ababa. He also says the IGAD leaders resolved that President Kiir and Machar continue to negotiate on the areas of disagreement and to hold more talks in Khartoum, possibly as early as next week, with the future talks to be held in Nairobi.
The IGAD summit said and decided that, yes, all the provisions that are agreed should be separated from the provisions which are not yet agreed. And that the imposition of any agreement on the parties is not a solution to the problems of South Sudan. So they agreed that the parties should continue to eliminate all the agreed issues and thereafter continue to negotiate on all the outstanding issues.
Representatives for both Kiir and Machar confirmed that no agreements were reached in their meeting in Addis Ababa Wednesday night. While Makuei says both Kiir and Machar committed themselves to working toward ending the conflict, the government is not ready to have Machar seated in the next transitional government.
The people of South Sudan have had enough experience of Riek Machar. And as such, people are not ready. We are not ready to receive Riek Machar again in his position so that he can come and cause another J2. We are not ready for that. And as such, if Riek Machar wants to be the president of the republic, it is the people of South Sudan who would come and vote him in.
Mabior Garang, the SPLMIO chairperson for national communication, responded in a statement to Makuei's remarks, saying, quote, "This is unfortunate at a time when the negotiations are at a high level of maturity." Garang called Makuei a non-peace spoiler and accused him of being intent on derailing the peace process. The Revitalization Forum was launched by the IGAD heads of state 10 months ago with the aim of revitalizing the 2015 peace deal. Its collapse has been seen as a huge disappointment by many South Sudanese and observers alike. Akwoch Ajang, chairperson of the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance, says Kiir and Machar should prioritize ending the conflict.
We have not seen the will of committing themselves to the interests of the people. Instead, they are negotiating for the position. Who is going to be first vice president? Who is going to be a member of parliament? Who is going to be a minister? For us as citizens, we want peace. We want stability.
Some regional leaders also expressed disappointment and frustration at the IGAD Council of Ministers meeting yesterday. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed Ali posted in his Twitter account saying, quote, "The crisis in South Sudan has grown to become a crisis in each of our respective countries in the region. Our vital national security interests are at stake. Business as usual is over. We need to act and act now. End of quote. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The interim chairman of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, who just returned from Addis Ababa this past hour, confirms the warring parties failed to reach an agreement on how to end the violence in South Sudan. Gabriel Changston says the meeting between President Kiir and Machar did not resolve how to proceed on the more contentious issues, including power sharing. Changston says the South Sudan Alliance will continue to participate in future meetings in Khartoum and Nairobi to find solutions to the conflict.
What they did on the 15th evening when we arrived, they serve us with the revised copy of the new bridging proposal, which was not that different from the first one, with the exception of some changes with the exception of dissolution and reconstitution of the National Legislative Assembly. But otherwise, everything else was as in the last proposal. So the parties were not also engaged. So they were asked to produce a counter-proposal, which we did. And then that counter-proposal was not also discussed to know how people will react to it. So in actual fact, there was nothing new that was discussed or agreed upon.
What about your meeting with Dr. Riek Machar? We understand that Dr. Riek Machar met with the leaders of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance. What did you discuss in that meeting with Dr. Riek Machar?
Well, first and foremost, we welcome his... He's joining the peace process, and at that time we were not aware whether he was fully released from house arrest or he was just brought for for the peace talk. So we welcome that gesture, as we all know that an inclusive peace process will include everybody, including Riek Machar. That was one point. The second one was his appreciation and word of thanks for what the Alliance and IO did in December when they demanded that he should be released. Other issues were bilateral, that we updated ourselves on our negotiation positions and also the way forward, how the two organizations can work together closely on the negotiation issues, especially the understanding issue.
You just returned from Addis Ababa. Just give us your assessment of the meeting between the two leaders, President Kiir and Rebel leader Riek Machar. There are reports that the two leaders met face to face. Do you think the two leaders going to continue working together? Information Minister Michael Makuei made a statement that President Kiir is not willing to work with Riek Machar.
Well, according to the briefings we got from Dr. Riek about their face to face meeting, there was no much progress made, and that is why it has to be continued, probably in Khartoum and maybe in Nairobi. As to whether the two will work together, we are negotiating peace agreement, and if people are talking of that, we have to reconcile and make consensus. So anything is possible. So we cannot rule out. Yes, the government can say anything they want to say, but the reality later on will prove them wrong or prove them right.
That's Gabriel Changston, interim chairman of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, speaking with my colleague John Tanza in Nairobi earlier today. Jonglei State's police commissioner has fired more than 50 police officers in Bor. The officers are accused of failing to obey orders and perform their duties. The commissioner says the 53 men and women were deployed in Bor South County to keep the peace after intercommunal clashes there. But some of the officers reportedly fled their duty stations. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Major General Chola Temujonget says Jonglei police must be capable of carrying out the full mandate of protecting the lives and property of the state residents.
They have tried all means. They could not even appreciating that all these steps. We resort even of taking many their salaries to the areas of conflict where they are supposed to gather. To keep work or peace into those areas. They receive many, then immediately once each of them receive his salary, he just march away. We would like that the security to be in its place. If no security, and then people of Jonglei would be in a problem. And that is why we are expecting something from police to be in its place.
Jonget says he fired the officers to show the rest of the police service that any officer who neglect their duties will be dismissed.
We are going to see with this example that we set, with this 53, we are going to see if it is still there is resisting. It is still, we are going to dismiss. To make more dismission to those who are still resisting until this police become with the new faces.
The police commissioner notes that Jonglei is among South Sudan states with a large police force. He adds that state officials are yet to decide whether or not to recruit more to replace those he let go. Some of the dismissed officers dispute the assertion that they abandoned their duty stations. One sergeant who prefers to be identified only as John for fear of retribution says he and his colleagues were wrongfully dismissed. He says before firing the officers, Commissioner Jonget should have first ordered an investigation to determine whether in fact all 53 officers worked away from their duties following intercommunal clashes that occurred early this year.
The Commissioner of Police refused to release our salaries to our families. When we came back to us, what happened? He began dodging, going to Juba, and ordered the cashier not to allow people to receive their salaries. From there, we went backward to our work. When we listened that he has come back from Juba, we came. And when he saw us, we are very many. In that process, we are very active in asking our money. He terminated us.
John says the fired officers are petitioning state lawmakers to investigate the matter.
We set up our committee to go to inform parliament about what is going on in police headquarters. We submit our letter to the acting speaker to verify the case which led to our termination to see whether it is unfair or is right.
John says even if the state parliament determines the commissioner was justified in firing the police officers, he expects to be paid his pension after serving in the South Sudan National Police Service for 13 years. Another officer who spoke on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisals criticized Jonget's decision. Speaking in Dinka, the policeman says he was away on annual leave and shocked to learn he was let go this week.
I took a leave from my commander from the field in Bor South County so that I come to Bor Town to visit my family. Now they are saying I escaped from my duty station and is why the other colleagues and I have been dismissed. That is not fair. And look, our salaries for the previous month have not been paid. And here is the commissioner who says you are dismissed. How can we be happy? In fact, I myself am not happy.
The Jonglei State Legislative Assembly Acting Speaker, Ali Maler, confirms he has received a petition from the dismissed officers. He says Parliament will study the petition and decide whether or not to summon the police commissioner to explain his action. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The European summit scheduled for this weekend on the migrants issue is in trouble. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's one thing do you like best about yourself?
Wow.
The best thing I like in myself is that when I believe in what I'm doing, nobody can change it. And when I say this is where I'm heading to, nobody can change it. If I already made up my mind that this is it, so that is it. Nobody can change what I have in my mind.
I love smiling. It hides everything. You can never tell when I'm sad. You can never tell when I'm happy. So I smile a lot to bring out the best in me.
I'm a pencil artist. I can draw. I grew up doing that in primary school, and I perfected doing that. So I can draw you. And I can also, I like music, so I play guitar.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The mini-EU summit on the migrant crisis scheduled for this Sunday in Brussels has hit a major snag, as some of the EU's 16 members say they won't attend. In addition, Italy says it won't agree to anything unless the deal helps Italy cope with the huge influx of migrants there. Reporter Catherine Field is following developments and fills in VOA's Kim Lewis about the latest turn of events.
This EU summit really came at the initiative of Germany and France. Both countries are not any of the frontline EU countries which receive the bulk of the migrants who land on European shores. But certainly it came out of a summit meeting between the two leaders this week that they both felt that there needed to be a EU-wide solution or step forward to having some sort of joint action when it came to dealing with the migrant influx. They had hoped it would be all wrapped up and an agreement would be reached before the Sunday mini summit, but that has turned out to not be the case, even though there are some 16 countries who will be attending this mini summit on Sunday. There are some very notable absences from this particular summit.
Who are some of these countries that are saying they're not going to attend?
In particular, it's the so-called Visegrad states: Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, and the Czech Republic. They say they're not going because their bottom line is they reject any suggestion of a mandatory refugee resettlement among EU members. They say that isn't what they want. They want to see instead tougher external borders to the European Union, so they are staying away.
Italy also is saying that it won't agree to anything unless they get some help.
Indeed, Italy has played very hardball in the lead up to this weekend's summit. They say that unless Italy is at the forefront of the discussions, unless Italy is prioritized in the discussion, they're not going to sign up to anything. And in fact, they've been quite successful in that so far, in that a draft agreement that had been circulated around the capitals has now been taken off the table. The idea is now that this is just going to be a meeting, a sort of a get-to-know-you meeting, a sort of a step ahead of next week's major summit. And so Italy has managed to, if you like, take the initiative on this meeting and say, look, you've got to look at what our country is doing. You've got to look at the pressures that Italy is facing. In particular, Italy is saying, on the one hand, we need help with the migrants who are coming to us, but we also need help from the threat that other EU countries are going to send back migrants from their countries that have first of all landed in Italy and then moved on around Europe. The other problem for this summit this Sunday came from the German government this morning. The German government spokesman said that she thought there might not be a EU-wide agreement. And in fact, Germany is now looking for voluntary bilateral and possibly trilateral agreements to find a way out of this particular, if you like, problem that the EU finds it enough that they do have all these migrants arriving.
In the meantime, Catherine, the plan to set up safe harbors in North Africa has been dealt a blow, with NGOs and some EU officials saying these areas are not safe enough.
This was a plan put forward by the Europeans, a so-called disembarkation scheme. And that would see migrants who were picked up in the Mediterranean taken to sites in North Africa, and in particular Algeria, Egypt, Libya, Tunisia, Niger, and Morocco. Now, there was criticism that these countries were perhaps not even safe for migrants. What the EU has done now is they have come back and they've said that they will go to the United Nations and the International Office for Migration and ask them to help set up these sort of safe places for refugees to stay, and that those genuinely feeling persecuted either through war or civil unrest will be able to have their papers dealt with there and could possibly be given the resources, a plane ticket and the papers to come to Europe and be able to restart their lives here.
That was reporter Catherine Field speaking with VOA's Kim Lewis from Paris. Turning now to the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo, where opposition leader Jean-Pierre Bemba is expected to return home next month. Leaders in Bemba's movement for the liberation of Congo told international journalists he would attend the party's Congress starting July 12th. The International Criminal Court in The Hague earlier this month overturned Bemba's conviction on war crimes charges after he had spent 10 years in prison. Bemba was convicted in relation to atrocities that rebel troops he led committed in the Central African Republic. His return to the DRC may shake up the country's presidential election in December. Bemba, a former vice president, remains popular, and some supporters hope he will run in the election. Party officials say it is not clear that he will be a candidate. President Joseph Kabila was supposed to have left office in 2016, but his government has delayed elections repeatedly, saying it needs more time to prepare. His critics, however, say Kabila wants to retain power. Opposition groups have held scores of protests, and some areas have been rocked with violence over the past 2 years. There was a tragic event in Uganda involving South Sudanese fans of the World Cup that ended in 4 deaths. Police in Uganda have arrested 15 South Sudanese who were allegedly involved in the brawl while watching a match over the weekend. The fight occurred in a refugee camp during a match between Brazil and Switzerland. Reports say it began as an argument ensued between two men that quickly escalated. The 4 people killed included a 13-year-old boy. Authorities in the refugee camp say they are working to alleviate tensions among camp residents following the brawl. Joining us now with an update on World Cup news is VOA's Gwen Uten. And Gwen kicks off with some match predictions by a Nigerian prophet.
During this World Cup tournament, it was reported that Nigerian fans asked if it was possible to enter the stadium with live chickens to bring them good luck. Their request was denied, and it was later reported that fans emphatically disputed that the requests were ever made. Well, ahead of Nigeria's match against Iceland, there were feathers and also prayers and prophecies.
Hey! The Iceland you see today, today, 2-0.
No!
Nigeria 2, Iceland 0.
This Nigerian prophet rang a bell, chanted a prayer, waved some feathers, and predicted, not surprisingly, a win for Nigeria. However, that forecast was quickly brushed off by Iceland supporters.
No. We are going to win this match 2-1.
They're saying 2-0.
Yeah, that's their problem.
Absolutely. No, there's no chance. Even though their dance is good, but they won't have a chance.
Iceland will next play Croatia on Tuesday. Nigeria faces Argentina in their final group match that same day. Speaking of Argentina, Argentine fans may still very well be in shock after Thursday's 3-1 loss against Croatia. Stunned fans left the stadium in disbelief about the outcome. This Argentine fan says he's not looking forward to their next match against Nigeria.
We are not attacking. We don't know how we go to the court, and we don't know what to do.
So Sampaoli, please prepare the team because they don't know what to do.
Hola, do you think Nigeria will be better?
To be honest, I don't know. I don't know because each time we walk to the court, it's like a bet. We don't know if it's going to be well or not. It's like just guess.
On the other hand, jubilant Croatian fans were already claiming the World Cup title.
We are the world champion already.
We are so excited. We are not expecting 3 goals in one match, so we are very happy. I don't know what to say, so emotional. Thank you.
Croatia defeated Nigeria 2-0 last Saturday, and with Thursday's 3-0 win against Argentina, Croatia has cruised into the World Cup knockout stage. As I mentioned, their next match will be against Iceland on Tuesday. Argentina's match against Nigeria is on that same day. Also on Thursday, France defeated Peru 1-0. France supporters who watched the match on a mega screen chanted Kylian Mbappe's name after his game-winning goal. And at age 19, Mbappe is now France's youngest scorer at the World Cup. France claimed victory and sent the South Americans out of the tournament. After the match, this France supporter said their win was hard fought.
Unfortunately for Peru, they couldn't make it, but it was difficult. The second half was tougher than we thought.
This year marks Peru's first appearance in the World Cup since 1982, and Peruvian fans took the loss with a mixture of sadness and pride.
Not disappointed, sad, but we are really proud of this team. Like last year, we didn't have World Cup, and this year we have.
And the fans, we are very proud of our you know, fellow Peruvian people. We all came here, we sacrificed everything, and still, you see, we all became united. And this is what sport is all about. This is what soccer, football is all about. You come together, you celebrate football, and you give it your best.
Yes.
That's what we did.
Yes,
you give it your best.
We are good. Yeah, we are very happy with the performance. We are very happy with our people. We are very proud of our team.
Peru will play their final game against Australia on Tuesday. And with that, I will end this report. For South Sudan in Focus, I'm Gwen Uten in Washington.
And on an interesting note, it looks like the Nigerian prophet was correct. Nigeria just won the match 2-0 against Iceland. Our thanks to Gwen Uten for that report. And that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song Tarazina with Satona. To Satona with the song Tarazina. I'm Ayen Deng Bior in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles this week. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
yeji fi Khartoum ya kullah bitadan wa saga bitara wa ana maraki sayrata fi al-yawm al-tinani shufni ana qulu rajili wa antaytu wasar gurusu wa talajjib alayfatu.